Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
That's right. Thank you, MOTAT.
Yeah, indeed.
And thank you, Alan, for finding your way here and joining us.
Yes, for those who don't know, they're doing some construction around here, and the steps to BFM were kind of blocked off, so that was fun.
Can't hear the banging and the drilling or all of those things in the background. But yes, cooling the brain or suspended animation.
Yes, suspended animation. Right, who's seen 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Hi, wait, let me think how old I was then.
Oh, come on. You weren't even born. But in that movie, they put a whole bunch of astronauts into suspended animation so that they could sort of cool down or they slow down all their body process and everything for the big long trip to Jupiter, as it was. And then they would reawake them, and then good old Hal, the computer, decided to cut off all of their supplies. And anyway.
Oh, this is a film. This didn't really happen.
No, this didn't. This didn't really happen. But it's a very good movie. If you haven't seen it, my goodness, you have to see it. And there's also a story that has done the rounds about good old Walt Disney, of all people. And this one apparently has been discredited, according to Snopes, as I looked up yesterday. But the fact that when he died, his body was preserved in liquid nitrogen and waiting for the day when medical science could be advanced enough to bring him back from the dead and fix what was ever wrong with his body at the time that he died. And
okay.
So that's a thing called
He died from it, though.
Yeah, he died of it was some sort of cancer, I believe.
So how would they be able to bring him back and reverse it?
Well, there you go. We don't know yet. That's science.
The story is that he was hiding under Disneyland.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah, that
he's
apparently somewhere under Disneyland in a big vat of liquid nitrogen.
Okay.
But apparently he got cremated. Apparently.
So it sounds like there's many stories. So
but
what's
anyway,
the current story?
So segueing into the current story, so there's a doctor in Maryland who has announced this, I guess, breakthrough, I'm not sure yet, at a conference recently. And basically what the problem with surgery is sometimes is that you get people coming in with major, major traumatic blood loss. So they're just basically, you know, blood's going everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. And the surgeons haven't got very much time to operate in situations like that. So this doctor's solution or possible solution to this problem is to actually replace all of the patient's blood with ice-cold saline solution.
Replace it all?
Yeah. Okay. So you then pump ice-cold saline solution around, presumably oxygenated saline solution, just to keep the oxygen.
So they're still getting...
Yeah. But what this does is that it slows down all of the processes in the body, particularly the brain. So the brain almost is stopped at that temperature. So apparently with the ice-cold saline, it cools the brain down to less than 10 degrees. And all of your other physiological processes are slowed down. And that means that the surgeons then have time to actually do the operation with your body almost shut down, essentially. Okay.
Okay. And so many questions.
Yeah. So now, the thing is that he announced this at a conference, and he said that it had been tried on at least one patient, quote unquote, and he didn't actually say whether the patient survived or not.
Well, that's a bit of a sign, isn't it?
Well, apparently this has been done on pigs.
Okay.
So it's worked on pigs. They've found that they can do it with pigs. So the next thing is human trials. So they have apparently, or they want to, by the end of next year, have 20 human subjects for this particular trial to see if the whole thing works.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay, question. They're just getting rid of all the blood in the body.
Yep.
Isn't that a problem?
Yeah, I would have thought so too.
Hypothermia? Is that, are we talking like if the... You know, we're going to start shutting down our organs, essentially, which is what, you know.
Yeah, but only for a short period of time.
I think so what's the damage that's going to happen to the brain in that moment?
Yeah, good, very, very good question.
Okay, great, cool. Sorry. And in the sense that the whole point of them slowing it down was so that, for example, if you car accident, you're losing blood, that's the time thing, right? They're wanting to get something done quickly.
Which they then got to sort of stitch you all up, or presumably.
By slowing the whole process down, then they do the thing that fixes you, then they can bring you back.
And then they bring you back. So they put your blood back in, bring you back up to temperature, and apparently everything is all okay. Now, you would imagine that if they did sort of announce this at a scientific conference, that there's hopefully some legitimacy. It's got to be kind of kosher.
Because it sounds incredible. Like, I have to say.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
This sounds amazing.
Yes, yep. And I mean, they have done similar things, but, you know, they chill patients in ice and stuff like that. In certain circumstances, I think, you know, when you've got very, very high fevers and stuff like that, they throw you in that.
Yep.
But, you know, this is another level, seemingly. But they call it emergency preservation and resuscitation. So this is what they're talking about with this suspended animation thing. So, you know, basically taking you almost to the point of death and then kind of bring you back. So, you
fascinating.
Know. Yeah, interesting. Interesting stuff. I'm not sure I'd want to be one of those 20...
Wow,
guinea pigs, so to speak, but
perhaps I guess it's not. I mean, if you're in the moment of, like, if say they choose a whole range of people to sign up to this who would be okay with it.
It's not a signing up thing per se. Seemingly, it's as I say, it's sort of the major traumatic thing. So it's like gunshot victims or stab.
That's what I mean, though, right?
Like, so you probably.
But surely they would have had to consent to it beforehand. You know, like, say, okay, I'm...
I don't know. I think you walk in with a gunshot wound, you're going to consent to anything.
But this is what I'm saying, is if you're in a position, perhaps, that you're likely to get injured, then you could possibly go... You know, like, if you're interested in scientific research, you can, I don't know, put your hand up for things in that sort of sense.
But you're not going to go out of your way to get shot.
No, and you don't intend to, so they might need to think about the time frame or something that... I don't know.
This is all medical ethics.
I think they said in the article that it was patients with a 5% chance of surviving otherwise.
Okay, so that's what I mean, though. Yeah. You get into that point, but if you're surely that, okay.
So anyway, again, it's a matter of sort of watch the space and see what transpires here.
If you come into the hospital and you've got 5% chance, are they going to be like, hey, do you want to do this? You know, are they still going to ask them on that verge of death?
I don't think so. I think they just go ahead.
They just try.
I would imagine.
See, what's the ethics in that?
I mean, surely,
right? Some people would be like, I want to be in part of this.
What's the ethics of not treating them versus treating them?
Well, exactly. This is what I mean, though.
Well, even giving consent whilst injured,
is that legitimate?
Like, is it possible to give consent whilst you're bleeding out?
Yeah, okay, cool. Oof. Another conversation, we're doing just science, right?
Sounds like a whole first year university course, I think, that.
Okay, a new force of nature.
New force of nature, yes, indeed. So there are apparently four fundamental forces of nature. So there is gravity, and we don't know how gravity works. Which is really weird.
But it works.
It works. And surprisingly, it is the weakest of all the forces of nature.
Wow.
Okay. We need forces of nature to hold things together. That's what these forces do. So we then have an imaginatively named thing called the weak force. And that is involved in nuclear decay. So, for example, you can have a neutron decaying to give a proton if it gets too close to a neutrino, which is then turned into an electron. So you've got all these sort of... particle swapping, and so that's mediated by things called bosons, particles called bosons, and it's called the weak force. We've got the electromagnetic force, and everyone's sort of familiar with that, so magnetism, electricity, all of that sort of stuff. And again, that is mediated by particles called photons.
Okay.
And the fourth force is the strong force, again, imaginatively named. And that's what holds the nuclei of atoms together, basically, because as you know from your fundamental chemistry in the nucleus of an atom, we've got a whole bunt load of positive charges right together. And normally we know that like charges repel, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So why doesn't the nucleus just fly apart because you've got all those positive charges together? It doesn't do that because of a thing called the strong force. And the strong force only operates at really, 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 really tiny distances. So 10 to the minus 15 meters, things like that.
Okay.
And that's mediated by a particle called a gluon, which is nicely named, I think. So it really sort of sticks the whole thing together. So there are four fundamental forces. And physicists have been trying to unify all of these. They're trying to get everything together and get sort of this thing called the grand unified theory. So they want to... everything to be sort of, you know, nice and neat and explicable in terms of just the one thing rather than all these four things. And again, as I said, we don't know how gravity works. Supposedly, gravity is mediated by particles called gravitons, which were proposed, I'm pretty sure, by Einstein, but they've never been seen, so we don't know how that works. Anyway, so there's a bunch of Hungarian scientists who in 2016 came along and said, oh, we think we might have found a fifth force. And, of course, they're met with a little bit of scorn and scepticism and stuff like that because, you know, there's only four forces and you're going to have pretty damn good proof if you're going to come up with
a fifth one.
A fifth force. And so in 2016, they said, okay, we are seeing something very, very strange here. And what fundamental physics allows you to do is when you've got particles busy decaying to give you other particles, you can figure out what angles they're going to shoot out at, basically.
Okay.
And you can do the calculations, you can figure out, right, these particles, these resulting particles should shoot out at this angle and this angle. And these guys were looking at radioactive nuclei and they were finding that the decay products were not shooting out at those particular angles. Okay. And they said, oh, look, this is a bit weird. And I guess people didn't believe them. So in 2016, this is when they said this. And now, just this week or last week, they've published more results on this, and so they've managed to verify their original findings. And they are now putting this down to a particle that they're going to call X-17, which is just such a scientifically named thing, isn't it?
The and that's going to be the name particle. Of the force of nature.
Well, supposedly, well, the particle that mediates that particular right. force of nature. Hopefully they're going to call this new force of nature something better than weak or strong, for God's sake. And so what people are saying is that, okay, you know, this is a further step along the pathway to proof and stuff like that. And they've managed to basically get their measurements down to a degree of precision whereby they can figure out what the mass of this hypothetical X-17 particle is and what its lifetime is, which is pretty cool. And so comments on this paper say that, you know, if it's real, it's going to be an absolute dead cert Nobel Prize because it's going to change fundamental physics, which is kind of amazing. So, again, it's another one of these wait and see moments, I guess. And we'll see what happens here. But for surely it would be, you know, it'll be like the Higgs boson, I guess, which basically got a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, surely this is major.
The year after that was discovered, yeah.
And if there is five, then how many more could there be?
Indeed. Yes, that's the thing with science. You can't be too dogmatic and say there are only four because there are four that we know at the moment.
Yeah.
Doesn't preclude the fact that there might be more coming along, you know.
That's right. There's a great scene on Friends like that. I don't know if you've seen it. Between Ross and Phoebe. You should go YouTube it. No, I can't re-perform it. Maybe I'll try and get it up and we can listen after the break. Anyway,
okay, fair enough.
Shall we let's touch on this final one quickly.
Very quickly indeed.
Bad grammar.
Okay, so there is a journal called the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships. And, you know, some people study this stuff.
It's got to be known, right? We've got to find out this stuff.
And so in the last month, there was a paper published, and the title of the paper was Impression Formation on Online Dating Sites, Effects of Language Errors in Profile Texts on Perceptions of Profile Owners' Attractiveness.
Okay.
Okay. Right. What the hell does all that
what
mean?
What does that mean?
Right, so this is a Dutch university, and what they did was they got 373 quote-unquote older adults who were members of a particular Dutch dating site, an online dating site. And basically what they did was they sort of set these people up with profiles and got them to look at particular profiles. And the upshot of it was, okay, some of the profiles had photos, some of the profiles didn't have photos, mm-hmm. and they were asked essentially to rank the person's attractiveness on the basis of the blurb that the person had written about themselves. And so some of the blurbs involved grammatical errors, and others were written in perfect, in this case, Dutch, because that's where it was done in Holland. And basically the guts of the study was that if you want to appear attractive on an online dating site, for God's sake, use good grammar. And it's as simple as that. So as I say, they were asked to rank the attractiveness of people based essentially on their grammar. And wow. If they were misspelling words or whatever. And this wasn't their original idea. They sort of thought that that people who used, you know, lots of exclamation marks and all uppercase or lowercase, they'd be seen as sort of kind of hip and cool and all of that sort of thing.
Enthusiastic.
And, yeah, and what they found was that people who used correct grammar were in fact rated as quote-unquote warmer people.
Oh, wow. That's a very specific thing to say.
It is.
How do you get the warmth of a person?
Okay. I'm not sure how you rank warmness or how you measure warmness. I don't know. But again, this very is just subjective. A feeling, which is, you know.
Communicated through spelling.
Indeed. So those of you out there who aren't having much luck with your whatever profile, then maybe do a quick spell check, grammar check, whatever. Put it back up there, see how you go.
And what, less exclamation marks? Less capitals?
Fewer exclamation marks, yes. All that sort of stuff. Don't use all caps, you know. Don't write you when you mean Y-O-U.
Okay.
It's a big no-no.
We have sort of moved on from that, you know. That used to be that
Text language, because you only had 100 and whatever characters, wasn't it? 140, 120.
And now you have a whole keypad on your smartphone.
And away you can go, yeah. So thank goodness for the English. You know, the English language is saved by technology. There you go.
Right. Let's talk in a couple of weeks then,
Alan. We shall do. It's getting near the end of the year.
Near the end of the year.
I know.
Maybe you both can do a best of. Maybe you and Marcus can have.
Okay.
Well, we'll see. There might be new science that we need to talk about. So.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Talk soon.
Okay.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Say no.